Shut up and sit down.
I bike hard, I bike fast. Try to save that money, I don't need gas. Got a lane for myself, I'll take your...
I said it before and I'll say it again. Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while. You could miss it.
Burning calories so I can eat Ghirardelli. Still a bit confused why I have a pot belly. I bought this bike for several dollars. It's worth the price, now I look like a baller.
Hustling for money,
trying to stay in the game. I'm not tired at all.
Second one's expensive when you buy a brand name.
She's light as a feather, I'll never have better.
Her chain's off the chain.
While Maverick Grant, Evan Price, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Doring whine about being tired and needing time off, I'll be here cranking out gem after gem. We know who does all of the heavy lifting around here, so don't be surprised when it's just me next week. I've got you covered, my friend. Enjoy the Dialed podcast and I'll see you next week.
I bite hard, I bite fast.
You're not gonna have your mommy slam behind you anymore and wipe your little douches. Oh no, it's time now to turn this mush into muscles.
Everywhere I went, I rode my...
Hey y'all, Jake's computer here. I was screwing with the guys for the first 15 minutes, but they figured out what I was up to. You guys got me this time, but I'll be back.
Computers are about trying to murder you in a lake.
Hi, welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I'm Jake Bunder. I'm here with Lance Friggin' Hepler.
Lance Friggin' Hepler.
Welcome.
Back in the saddle.
Here we are, rolling, doing shows.
To Friggin's left, Matt LeGrand.
Left. You guys look great today. What's my catchphrase?
Turn it over.
I don't remember what I... What's up, ladies and gentlemen of the internet? You guys look fantastic.
Okay, hold that thought. I have gifts for both of you.
Okay. I know. It's... You know what's funny is he hid them. He came in the door. I saw that he brought some stuff. He came in the door. He like went off to the side for a second, which I just assumed that he had some stuff to drop off for you because then he waits for us to press record on the podcast, and then he's like, wait, pause. Yeah, hold on. Does he need help with the door, maybe? Okay, no. I'm not going to help him anyway. Is this like, oh, we have leftover food, and we want you to get fat,
yes.
Matt? We want Matt to get fat.
Now, wait,
Fat Matt.
That's all from Matt. Have you guys ever seen the movie Stand By Me?
Yes.
Remember the pie-eating contest?
Okay, so we have a box.
Oh, yeah.
We have a box of mini pies for Matt's family.
You know what's... Okay.
Apple and Marionberry.
We have people coming into town today, too, so perfect. it will be used and abused.
Box of mini pies and then a box of mini pies for Jake's family.
That will get eaten.
And nothing for frickin' Evan, because he wasn't here and he's a loser.
Dang it, ooh. Mr. Price.
So
boxes of pies.
In Evan's defense, I was like, are we doing a podcast? How about right now? Like, literally, that's the text I sent like 30 minutes ago, and these guys are like, yep, let's do it.
Yeah, was even better than the normal text I get from Matt. The thing.
Yeah, 5 minute. You want to go for a bike ride? How about when? When are we going to do that? How about now?
I've got a bottle of red wine Cabernet for both of you.
Good.
Two bottles of Italian Prosecco, which is like champagne.
Yes.
It's kind of like Italian champagne.
Wow.
And there's some beers in there for both of you.
Ooh, okay, nice.
And also,
to grab one of those on the way out.
And I got you each like four of the takeaway gifts, which are little jars of honey with little seed packets of wildflowers.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and Brandy made all this crap.
So what happens if I eat like three or four of those pies and then chug that Cabernet?
And we go for a ride immediately after.
And we do hills hard.
We're on it. Let's do that.
You're riding behind me.
It wouldn't be the first thing I've been puked on.
I know. I'm like thinking to myself. You don't have to give Lance anything. He'll throw up no matter what. So salsa. Maybe salsa.
I threw up recently on a ride, and every time I do it, I just laugh at myself.
What happened this time? What happened most recently? It wasn't salsa.
It was just eating too close to a hard ride.
Okay.
So I'm like doing like a hard...
Was that workout?
Interval effort. Okay. Yeah, I'm doing like an outside workout and I'm like, oh.
I'm going to throw up.
Here comes the Chipotle.
Chipotle. It's always a Mexican something.
You need to puke on rides at least a dozen times, and there's probably another dozen that I don't even know about. Like, you just mentioned. Matt, how many times have you puked because of a workout?
Running or cycling?
All the above.
A lot.
Really?
Well, because I was more sensitive when I was younger to stuff like that. And so, yes. I got stories galore. I actually was like the favorite to win the state championships in the mile my senior year. And during the sectional race, we have to do sectionals to qualify for senior year. I was running, wasn't even that fast. I basically had to run, you know, let's say 4:45 or something like to qualify for state. Wasn't much.
Yeah.
And I threw up because it was in Alabama. You go from like reasonable weather to insanely stupid hot. So I threw up, kind of stepped off the track and I was throwing up, whatever. Got back on the track, ran another lap, then threw up some more. And then I finally just like dropped out and my coach was like, it's fine. It doesn't matter. Like you already stepped off the track the previous time. So it wouldn't have mattered had you finished. You should have been disqualified anyway.
Oh, right.
And he was like, for the 2 mile, which is like even more my race, he was like, don't go hard. Just finish.
Cruise it. Just cruise it.
Yeah. He was like, do not try to win the race. Just finish.
I love it.
So I didn't even make it to state in the mile my senior year.
Oh.
Puke talk. This has been puke talk. I thought it was going to be
puke talk.
Wah, wah, wah.
Vomit comment. I
was telling my wife that same story like a week or two ago. I don't know why the puke talk was, you know, some sort of puke conversation. And, oh, I think it was because Ethan gets upset. His stomach gets upset before these races too. And he throws up before races. And I was telling her like, yeah, I had, you know, same thing, sensitive stomach. And she was like, you've never told me that story. Podcast needs to know.
People need to know.
The podcast needs now, to know.
You should
have
know,
a sensitive stomach?
I do not have a sensitive stomach. I have a pretty
okay,
like
Chipotle
steel,
in you.
Like I have a steel trap stomach. And this isn't like I have the flu vomit, like everything's right. coming up. It's like,
just like one and done.
It's like one and done. And yep. like and it's usually it's like I've taken in too much stuff to mm-hmm. my stomach, or I even threw up at Unbound once, but because I was trying to hammer carbohydrates, and it was by hour four, it was too much. I was trying to do 100 grams of carbs an hour, and I had not trained it, and by hour four, it was too much, and I puked like once, and I'm like, oh,
well,
done.
You're lucky that it wasn't something worse, because sometimes like when you overcarb, it's the opposite
it's the
direction.
Other end of the esophagus.
It's basically a lot of... a lot of times it's like your
esophagus.
The esophagus.
It's like not enough blood flow to your stomach because you're working hard, your muscles are working hard, and it's like not
And
good.
it's not processing any of
and
it.
And it hurts.
And it hurts, so it needs to come out.
Yeah.
Now, it's fair to say that there's a difference between puking, like a good heave, and like a regurgitation.
Yes, yeah. these are regurgitations. So yeah. No, it's not really, but you know... But I am like it's just like this. I'm riding along. I'm like, oh, what am I gonna burp? Nope, bloop, and then I just laugh. Yeah. It's like I puke and I just laugh. And I'm like, oh, I guess I puked again. So they are kind of regurgitations.
Yeah. If it's more than your mouth can hold.
Yeah, that's a puke. Yeah. I'm spitting stuff out, and I'm looking around to see if anybody's watching me or if there's a car behind me or.
We're
never puked because of exercise and that first.
Yeah. You push yourself hard, but you probably also, well, maybe not. I mean, usually you start being careful about timing eating and stuff like that because you've had problems in the past.
Mine are all from mistiming issues.
Yeah,
it's not because I can go really, really hard and not puke. Yeah. It's not from overexertion. It's from there's too much
timing
stuff in my stomach.
Yeah.
Sour stomach, but I've never puked, so let's hope it stays that way.
We're getting close to 10 minutes into the podcast. We've talked about puking.
All we've talked about is puking.
We did our intro. We talked about puking. We did the gifts. That was so far pretty good podcast, really.
How many times would you guys say that you've thrown up since, well, we'll just say first grade? There's a reason for me asking that. About how many times?
Since first grade, a ton of times.
You lost track. You can't even keep track of it.
Right. 1,000.
Yeah.
1,000 times. Many, many, many.
1,000.
All the different reasons, like food poisoning.
Yep. Yep.
The whole gamut. My wife has had 3 children and has lived an entire life and has not thrown up since the first grade.
Are you kidding me?
She has a full-on phobia of throwing up.
Well, it's not pleasant.
If anybody in the house mentions anything about their stomach being upset, you just opened up Pandora's box because she's going to be on you for like the next 24 hours and she will literally ask you every like 5 to 10 minutes, are you feeling okay? Are you going to throw up? Because she has such a phobia.
She wants to be far away from it.
She wants to be far away from it. She can't hear it. She can't see it. She can't do anything of it. Because A, it I guess grosses her out and she's scared. Yeah. But B, she doesn't want it to happen to her. Like to her, it's like, that's like one tiny like little ratchet above death.
Yeah.
She's going to throw up.
Well, I can't wait to go camping with you. The game is on.
Oh, man. Oh, this stomach virus. I need that in the stomach virus.
I'm okay, though. Don't worry.
Don't worry. Wait, is this your drink or my drink?
We're going to go back to the Stand By Me little reference. Maybe we should all do something where we take a swig of Castor Oil. Isn't that what they
use? That's right. And eat some pies and then puke it all up.
Watch her run for the hills.
You know what I keep thinking about? I keep thinking about the poster that's at the lab. The shop, there's this poster in the bathroom, and it's basically of Lance, and it's something about salsa, and it's just this guy just ralphing.
Sun Valley Salsa Company, it's KOM fuel.
And it's this guy that's Dylan Wiggins puking made. Off of his bike, and it is so well done.
It's very well done.
Anything that Dylan touches is gold. It's pure gold.
Those things have been hanging up at the lab now for over a year, and we get so many awesome comments about them. People absolutely love them.
People ask about the puke poster in the bathroom. Yeah. They're like, what is that?
People will come out of the bathroom often to say, that poster is hilarious. Like, at first glance, I didn't think anything of it. Then I looked a little bit closer, and just sometimes you hear people even chuckle.
It's all the poster.
Again, this has been
we're well past.
Sorry.
Bubbly sparkly
water. Yeah, my weekend was awesome. The wedding was fantastic. Yep. It was nothing but love and party and just a great time and very few issues, and the weather was great and all my family was there. I just had this amazing weekend. And thank you to my teammates who were able to come. I know I invited a lot of you, but not everybody could come. It was a busy weekend, but I had some teammates that came, and I ended up sitting with my teammates that night instead of my family.
Smart move. Your wife will remember that forever.
She's like, my sister. There was a table with, like, I have five sisters.
Yeah.
And so there was a table with, like, my mom and all my sisters and all my nephews and nieces and cousins and all this stuff. And they're like, Darby and Julie are reading their vows to each other. And my mom is like, where's Lance? Why isn't he sitting here? And she looks over. I'm sitting at the table with my teammates.
I can imagine you, like, grabbing your plate of food, and you're like about to sit down with your sisters, and you're like,
nope. I'm going to go sit with Jake.
Yeah.
That was funny because I feel like I know your mom just because I've talked with you about your family and your mom so many times. I don't think I've ever actually met her in person. At least I don't think so.
Sure.
I met her. Like, the first thing she tells me is like, you need to give my son back to me. You've taken him away from all the time. I never get to see him. She's always scoffing, riding his bikes with you. I'm like, I'm sorry. I want to give her a big hug. So.
That's awesome.
That sounds about right.
Good times.
Anyway.
That was fun.
It was a good time. It was a party.
That was good food.
Great food. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Stop, Matt. Yeah, I know.
Sorry, Matt. Matt was at a
swim meet.
Swim meet.
All week. It was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It was like, all the time.
That's thick.
Ask, I mean, did you tell me how many hours that was in total for you?
I don't know.
It's a lot. I mean, those days are so long because it's hot. I mean, we're outside the whole time.
Oh, yeah, and it was warm. Yeah.
It was hot.
Yesterday, I had to go sit at a 3v3 soccer tournament.
Oh, boy.
My wife and my oldest were out of town. They're up in Seattle. At
the Taylor Swift concert.
Okay.
With the rest of the world. Oh, my God, that's
everyone awesome. Was there. Yeah.
Bonkers for two nights. But
like 100,000 people.
Yeah. So
over, I think. I don't remember what it was. The numbers are staggering.
They're staggering. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
You guys looked at how, like, the financial breakdowns of how she's doing for all of these concerts.
I think the tour was going to be like hit $1 billion for the tour or something. It's like the biggest ever.
It's like 1 point something billion for the tour. Her take is roughly half of that. And they've broken down all of the numbers. She's going to make off of this tour for 106 shows over $500 million. That's her take.
Oh, my God.
It's interesting to me. Like, it does feel monumentous. Like, I don't think I can think of anything in our history. I mean, I'm only a young man of 44. So, I mean, you guys might be able to remember things further back. But I can't think of anything like this massive.
It's the biggest grossing concert of all time.
Yeah.
Pretty bonkers.
It seems interesting.
Amazing.
My wife and daughter waited in line. They got there so they got there a day before. So they had two concerts. The first one was on Friday night, I think it was, and the second one was on Saturday. No, I said
Saturday and Sunday.
So they went to the Sunday night one.
Okay.
The Saturday night one, they showed up early to get the quote unquote merch, and she makes millions of dollars from each show in just merchandise.
Just in merchandise.
And they waited in line for something like 5 or 6 hours, and my daughter
just wanted
the sweatshirt, and they get up there and they're sold out.
Five hours.
It was crazy. The whole time, it was a full-on party atmosphere, and like, she actually started the show, and she's playing in concert, and there was a sea of people out there outside of the concert, either getting merch or just listening to the concert because it's an outdoor stadium. And they were all singing along, and they were dancing.
I saw some TikTok like clips of it. Yeah.
So because they didn't have the sweatshirt, what did they do? They came back the next morning and they stood.
Oh my God.
I think she finally got it, but my daughter was beside herself. She's been a huge Taylor Swift fan
for a long time.
4 or 5 years old, and it's just like, it means the world to her. And she got to go to this, and it was a fantastic.
I'm glad that she got to do it. I don't understand. Like, that scenario and that environment is like, that's horrible. For me, like a person, so I don't like people. I don't like any of you guys. But like the whole thing is just like, oh man, that's torture chamber to me.
My wife said she was quite claustrophobic.
Yeah.
And there was a sea of people there, but it was a fun experience.
Good.
It's Taylor Swift. She kind of has universal appeal, you know? She has this underdog universal appeal.
I don't dislike Taylor Swift.
Right. So,
but I'm not going to go spend a lot of money to sit with a whole bunch of people.
That's true.
I mean, I would watch it on TV or something, but I'd probably change channel.
For 20 minutes or so. Maybe my favorite song, period.
That's it.
When gone, let me bring this back around.
Okay. Sorry.
I went to the soccer tournament. We left at like 8:15 in the morning, and I was there until almost 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Game after game.
Holy cow.
Bonkers. My daughter's team crushed it, and they ended up winning their second tournament in a row.
Oh, wow.
Weekends in a row, they've won twice. What happens when you sit out in the sun, even though you apply...
Buckets of sunscreen.
Pretty nice tan, but there was one spot on my body.
Oh boy!
Oh, you've got one, like, you wore shorter socks than normal,
and it's like a stripe.
Look at those sock tan lines. You've seen sock tan lines that nice in a while.
That's a nice line right there.
I don't think I have those.
Nope.
I normally have a sock tan line, but
that was sharp.
Well, I told Lance like to the wedding, like. I'm like, I think it was you. I told, maybe it was somebody else on the team. I'm like, I almost wore sandals to that. But then I put the sandals on and looked down at my feet. And I'm like, yeah, that sock tan line is bad. Right? So I opted to wear like some pants and whatever and just, you know, go forward. And then fast forward to now, that sock tan line is like 10 times worse.
Crisp. I like
sharp.
It.
People pay good money for sharp lines like that.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, Let's do it.
All right. Thanks for talking, guys.
We don't need to talk about bikes, do we? We got T-Swift. We covered puking, T-Swift.
Weddings.
We're good.
Prosecco.
Yeah.
That's it.
We got this.
All right. The tour's over, you guys.
Okay, it turns out that we had a little bit of an audio issue there. It's fixed now. But so if that first bit, I sound a little echoey or sound like I'm a mile away, apologies. Try and fix that in post.
Jake's mic wasn't working properly for some reason, so...
It was.
You didn't say anything funny anyway, so
no,
it doesn't matter.
No. I'm the dud on the show anyway, so who cares? All right, let's get back to what we came here to talk about, and we're just going to kind of sum up the tour. A little tour summary, a little wrap-up party. You guys have anything that you want to share?
Hot takes. Are we going to do hot takes?
And we're going to do some hot takes, too.
Okay, so we're going to do a summary and then hot takes?
Yeah, let's just kind of wrap it up. And I want to discuss kind of our final podium standings.
Oh, we should do that.
Talk a little bit maybe about some fantasy stuff that was taking
fantasy
place.
Thing doesn't matter.
Yes.
Fantasy doesn't matter.
You know what? You weren't last, Matt.
I know. But what's important is the predictions that we made on the podcast.
Yes, we need to. Yeah, that's true. No, I don't want to do that. I tell you, I did. I woke up kind of depressed this morning. I'm like, there's no tour. There is the women's tour that has started.
The Femmes, yep.
This is the tour hangover.
Yes.
It happens every year.
It's kind of a bummer. I'm like, I've been waking up and like...
Watching
like right away, and now we don't have that. So I'll have to watch the women's.
You generally will get up and start about what time though? And then you will rewind it a couple hours?
I wake up at like 7 and then rewind as far as the Peacock app will allow me to rewind it, which is only 2 hours.
Sure.
It's not like when it was just broadcast on an NBC channel.
Yeah.
I could record it and start it from the beginning. But with the Peacock app, it would only allow me to record 2 hours or not record 2 hours, but rewind 2 hours. So yeah, that's what I would do anyway.
Gotcha.
So are you gonna watch the women's race?
Yeah, I'll watch some of it. Sure.
I wanna like see I wanna watch some of it for sure. I wanna see like where to watch it and what the big stages are and all the details.
It's only a week long, if I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Going back to Le Tour, do you guys have anything that kind of sticks out for you? Anything that
Okay, I will say this. Watching Saturday's stage. So the Saturday was the last mountain stage. Mm-hmm. And I was just blown away by Thibaut Pinot was able to, he was in the break and then made an attack. So Thibaut Pinot was off the front on the second to last climb of the day.
Yep.
And Thibaut Pinot is from the region where the climb was. And he was climbing through that second climb. The crowds were 10 people deep.
Yeah.
They were 10 deep, all screaming for Pinot. It was
enchanting his name.
Enchanting his name and all these signs. I'm surprised that when he went through, they didn't like clog and block the road so he could go on and win the race.
They should have done is taking turns, giving him push up the hill so he could have kept that break.
He ended up getting caught and I think he finished top 10, but it was emotional to watch him in his last tour ride through his home area.
Good finale.
And just with all these rabid fans yelling, that was for fantastic.
Sure. For sure. That was very cool to watch. And I think that gave him quite a bit of extra, like, oomph.
Yes.
A little bit of extra adrenaline.
I got an adrenaline rush just watching it.
Yeah, to hold that a little bit longer.
Yeah, so that was really cool. And then watching Tade on that stage, he kind of recovered and was able to go. It was watching that battle. I'm going to have nightmares about Vingegaard looking over his shoulder.
Oh my gosh. What percentage of the tour did Vingegaard ride looking backwards?
Looking back.
Like 75% of the tour?
75%. He's looking to see where Pogacar is.
I just think, okay, so hindsight's 20/20, but like I think of it that stage 20 that you're talking about. And I think, you know, when Pogacar went, he put a surge in, he tried to break
Jonas.
Yeah. And he tried to break Jonas. And then like Jonas got on his wheel, no problem. It looks pretty good. And then I just think he should have gone over the top. Jonas should have gone for it because he wanted to win that stage. You could tell. He sprinted at the end. You know, he wanted the stage.
He tried to jump him at the end, but
it's Pogacar too little too late.
Yes,
like don't try to race Pogacar with whatever 25 meters to go.
Right.
Like if he like you wait for him to like throw a surge in, you match the surge, you wait for him to ease up just a bit and then you go.
Then
like
you go.
I think Vingegaard could have won that stage.
But this he didn't just, but you're right. He did not. As soon as Pogacar sat up too.
He's and like, then Gall caught them.
Yes.
Felix Gall caught the group. And then they just let Felix lead. Which if you're Vingegaard, like you don't have anything to do. Like your only job is to, you know, respond to attacks. Yes, you've got the jersey. Like don't let someone put 7 minutes on you and you're good. But I still think he wanted the stage. And if he wanted the stage, he should have like counterattacked.
Right away.
I think so.
Yeah.
That's my hot take that I know we're not on the hot takes yet, but
do you guys think that Jonas got that much stronger this year? Or do you think that it was Tade just not making smart decisions like Matt has alluded to the entire tour, like sprinting where he shouldn't be sprinting or like...
Okay, so different lead up for both of them.
Yeah.
Jonas, he put his whole year around this race.
Sure.
He prepped for this race.
Yeah.
You know...
Smart.
Yeah, right? Pogacar, not only did he get injured in Flèche Wallonne, or Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
He did all of those.
He did all those other races, and he won three of the
unstoppable
monuments.
Yeah. He was crushing.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was just racing his bike because he likes to race his bike, right? And so he just had a different set for it. I think their physiologies are pretty similar. I think Jonas had prepped a little better specifically for the tour than Pogacar did.
So do you put this on UAE for letting him do all of these races and not better managing him so that he can win the biggest race in the world?
I don't know.
Or maybe they had a priority of like, we want to win the monuments and we still think we can do the tour, but just, you know.
Maybe Tade told him like, hey, I'm going to go win everything, so just let me go race my bike when and where I want to. I mean,
Okay, but the big blow came at the time trial,
100%.
Where I don't think even Jonas expected to ride as well as he rode.
Did, yeah.
I mean, he held 7.5 watts per kilo for 14 minutes.
Don't be suspicious. Don't.
14 minutes he held 7.5 watts per kilo. Shut up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
He was tested 4 times in 2 days.
Yes, yeah.
They thought that's a little suspicious.
They were only testing him for dehydration. They weren't testing him for any drugs, though.
Perfect.
You're good there, buddy. You're good there.
So yeah, I mean, that's where, like, I mean, nobody really expected that, including himself. He like rode out of his mind. It might be the best time trial performance we've, you know, ever seen.
Yeah.
You know,
even better than
Pogacar beating Roglic.
That was more magical because of the way it came down to like having the official victory for the tour.
It was the day before. It was a
more magical moment in my spectator opinion. I do think that Vingegaard win in the time trial was weirdly fast. I wouldn't say that he's so much better this year than he was last year, because if you look at how he won last year, he dominated last year. He beat him soundly last year.
Yeah.
He cracked him with on that one day where he gained most.
That was my.
And then he waited for him the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like, to me, it was like, yeah, he's clearly the winner here.
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't close.
I feel like he had more help last year, though, with Roglic being in there and being able to do the rope-a-dope stuff
and
that cracked him.
And Pogacar's team was much better this year.
Yeah.
Yes, they
obviously
were.
Obviously.
Yeah. Yes. I mean,
they were better. They were able to support
Yates
him easier.
And Rafael
and honestly, Vingegaard's team was worse than they were last year, because, I mean, Sepkus is a stud. We all love him, but he had some crashes. He had some stuff. Like, he was pretty beat up at the end of that tour.
He had
like a bloody eye on the second to last day. Like, he really was.
He crashed hard that
he
day.
He helped. Rodriguez, it's not like he didn't help throughout the tour.
He was actually named the super domestique of the tour.
And but all of the pundits will gladly refer to him as one of the best super domestiques of all time.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Because he was hanging, he was beating the GC favorites as a super domestique.
Yeah.
And then when he peels off, he was still beating them.
Does that make you think that he should be a GC rider?
He mentioned something in somewhere within the past 3 weeks. He interviewed somewhere and they're like, hey, when are you gonna do GC? And he's like, yeah, I'd be interested in that.
Oh, he did, huh?
Yes.
He did, but he
I don't remember
he also,
where that was.
He also re-upped his contract with Jumbo Visma, and they made it clear to him that his role was as a super domestique. And he was happy for that. There's a little less pressure.
Yeah.
There's a little more predictability. You don't have to do these podium things after every stage.
Right.
He still is paid very well to be a super domestique, and he gets to race his bike, and he gets to be part of, you know, history
team.
And the winning team.
Yep.
But would he like to be at a race at some point where he was the one set? Possibly.
And he's earned it. I mean, so here's the thing.
Yeah, but he can't time trial.
Yeah. I don't think he's not the same. He's not at that caliber as the guys that we're talking about here.
Can't time
trial. You got Roglic on the team.
Yeah.
You got Vingegaard.
Yeah.
Vingegaard's going to keep doing the tour.
Yeah.
Roglic is going to pick one of the other ones to win. But there's three. There's three grand tours.
Wow. Yeah.
You got they could probably win one. But no, I mean, like, seriously, like, Sepkus could pick whichever one Roglic doesn't pick, basically, if they wanted to try
I saw an article yesterday. I only had a second when I was doing this. I was doing too many things, but I just read the caption in, like, the first paragraph. Vingegaard's going to...
He's going to the Vuelta. Yes.
Yeah. And
so is Roglic.
They're going to have a two-headed monster attack there.
Correct. They are. And actually, Sepkus is on the start list at the moment.
That guy needs a break, man.
He's done both.
Yep.
He helped Roglic win the Giro.
Yep.
He helped Vingegaard win the Tour, and he's on the schedule to do the Vuelta
He's finished two Grand Tours.
He has.
I wonder how many people finish three Grand Tours in a year.
There's not very many.
It's got to be rare.
Froome did it.
I think Froome did it.
Yep.
Yeah. So, but that could change. I mean, he split his face open.
He looked pretty beat up.
He's pretty beat up. He said he
can also recover by that time frame. I mean, how many weeks is it?
You got a month. Like, you got 4 weeks or something like that.
His face will heal.
Yeah.
Or I hope.
Yeah. So something could happen there. So, yeah. So, and it's interesting, you know, where it'll go or what it'll do, but... You know, and will Jumbo would love to win all three Grand Tours in the same year. I mean, that'd be
big.
Amazing.
So that makes a lot of sense for them to throw the kitchen sink at this last World Tour or this last Grand Tour to do that.
I hope Vingegaard rides in support of Roglic. I would love to see that until Roglic crashes,
or something happens and they crack. They save two guys unless.
Yeah.
Something happens to either one of them.
You got Vingegaard and you got Roglic supporting Sepp. That would be a big shock, but yeah, no, that would never happen. But
the problem is the time trial. Sep is just not as fast as a time trial. He's either one of those guys.
Well, but he's not as fast as those guys. But he didn't lose that much time. No. He was in the top 10 until the last day.
He only lost it because of the crash.
Now, here's another question for you, though. I mean, has he given it an honest go? I mean, is he...
No, he knows what his role is. His role at this moment.
He's not necessarily going all out on these time trials. So do we not know what he's truly capable of? I mean,
maybe.
Why would he turn himself inside out when he's got to go do super domestique stuff like the next day or within the next few days?
Because in the back of his mind, he has to be thinking maybe. I'm ranked 9th overall. I promise you that he finished up some of those stages because he could have gone full wout mode and gone to leading, to being super domestique to almost come to a stop. He could have done that, and he didn't. He always finished up.
Right.
So I think he, in the back of his mind, he's like, I'm in 9th overall. If something happens to my GC, I'm the next guy in line.
In that same respect, then, he shouldn't be taking this whole, I only want to be a super domestique for the rest of my life. If he really cares about his overall GC standings, it's more than just the team. It's got to be a little bit of him, can I do this?
Right.
Can I, can I be a GC guy? Can I go out there and win one of these
things? I think he's thinking about it. It doesn't look like there's anything finalized. It might be a couple of years, but there was some article over the past couple of weeks where he actually is quoted as saying, I'd like to give it a try.
Yeah. It would be rough, at least for me. Everybody's different. Everybody's got a different mindset. Everybody's got different goals, but it would be really rough for me to know that I am that good and I'm labeled as one of the super domestiques of all time and go through my entire career and just be that guy
and never
try myself and see how I could do.
Yep.
It was a Velo News article 6 days ago where they asked him and he said, I'd love an opportunity to race a Grand Tour GC.
Yeah.
That's
a headline, quote.
Does
for sure.
How old is he again? He's 28, 29?
27 or something like that. 28, yeah.
Okay. How long is this contract with Jumbo? And do you think Jumbo would give him an opportunity to try and win a GC?
I don't know.
I mean, with the likes of Roglic and Vingegaard on your team, probably.
If they're both injured, soon.
I think Jumbo will try to look for an opportunity to give him a chance.
Or somebody like Ineos that needs a good GC guy could swoop in and pay him handsomely. And then there's a few other teams out there too that could potentially step up and say, hey, come ride with us.
I would love to have Sepkus be a superstar. I mean, it pains me to say this. I don't think he's as good as, Remco. I don't think he's as good. If you're Ineos and you're going to throw money at someone, I don't think it's Sepkus. Sorry.
Well,
not that I don't want that to happen because I would absolutely go crazy. Right.
I don't think Remco is going to be going anywhere. I think that he's going to stay with Quickstep for the foreseeable future. His name is, loves him and he thinks that that's his next big hope. So I don't see him unless he really falters in the next 2 or 3 years. I don't think he's going anywhere.
But money talks. Ineos has money.
This is true. And there are plenty of other teams out there that are starting to look like they've got some shape about them. A Bahrain team. I mean, they've got some riders out there that are doing fantastic. Bora, they look. I mean, they've got Jai Hindley, but they've got some capacity to throw some money at some people. So there's a few other teams out there that look pretty good that could potentially entertain the thought of bringing somebody on, or Jumbo could just say, "Hey, your turn. You're up.
Go for it."
I mean, because Roglic is, for all intents and purposes, kind of getting into the twilight years of his race career.
He's
so
young. He's 30-something.
He's 34, 35, if I'm not mistaken.
I thought he was younger than that. I was thinking maybe it's
32. He's a little bit older than you think he is. Lance can look that up real quick.
Because he had a full ski career before.
Exactly.
Yeah, downhill skiing.
He seems to always be playing correctly. 33. So he'll be 34 next year. That's getting up there. Yeah. He's not too much younger than G.
He'd be 34 in October of this year.
Okay. I think G is significantly older. Isn't he 39 or something?
Seven or eight. He's 38, I think.
He's not that much older.
Oh, really? Okay. For some reason, I was thinking he was quite old.
He's 37.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So he's older, yeah.
So are you guys pleased with how everything wrapped up? You guys like the final results? Was that a fun tour for you to watch?
Yeah, it was. It was fun. It was exciting. It was every morning there was some drama happening.
Yeah.
That
was one of the better ones. I honestly think that it was up there in probably the top five. I wouldn't say it was the best one, but it was super fun to watch all the way up. And even after the time trial, even though that, Jonas put a bunch of time into Tata, you still kind of had this thought in the back of your head before the next stage that he was somehow some way going to chip his way back, or he was going to have a big stage win, and then Jonas was maybe going to crack a little bit. That never came to fruition.
Okay, so if we're ranking tours, I would say this was an awesome one. I really enjoyed watching it. I don't think it's like a top five tour, because here's the thing. I know that people are saying, well, it was close for a very long time.
10 seconds? It was 10 very, seconds difference it was for very close almost 15 for a stages? Long time. 16
but,
stages?
But when we were here, I think on our last podcast or whatever, like all of us were like, well, that's over.
Yeah.
And it was still whatever. We had like four more days. It just felt very over at that point.
Yeah. There was still a lot of stuff that needed to shake up. But we were correct too in saying that after stage 17, it was done. That the tour had been decided. And it was just a matter of like, well, can Pogacar hold on to a podium spot?
Right.
You know, what's going to happen with the Yates brothers? You know, like who's going to get what, where, when, why, and how for the rest of stuff? And that.
But nothing really happened. Yeah. I mean, for the most part, at the end there.
Yeah, there was some good stages to watch, but overall GC was like that was kind of done. So it's a lot better than, I don't know, the years of Sky when they were super dominant and they're like, they basically...
They take the lead in the second week and it's over.
Yeah. Not even the second week. It's just like stage five happens and all of a sudden Froome's like, you know, minutes up and like, yep, the tour just ended today.
And the way that used to work was like, we don't, like they might even get the yellow in the first week and they kind of like dump it on someone. And then they'd like, we want to get it. Yeah. This is the time we want to get it. And then they'd get it like they want to. And then they would just be like, it'd be over.
Yeah.
I agree that those were, and I liked watching those too.
Still exciting. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that this one was, I love Vingegaard and Pogacar. I like both of the athletes, so I'm happy when either of them do well. And so I love watching these races.
Yeah. The last 4 years have been fun to watch.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that like this generation of riders, you've got 2 years of Pogacar winning and 2 years of Vingegaard watching. Those were four of like some of the greatest tours to watch, in my opinion.
They're fun.
And what will happen next year if Remco's there too? You know,
just makes it even that much more dynamic.
Yeah, it does.
And there's some other names that started to float to the top of like, these guys might have some potential. Like Rodriguez from Ineos. I mean, I keep
young.
Saying that they were a disappointment.
22. He's 22.
He's got stuff to learn and he's going to get stronger and he's going to be a good, solid competitor.
I think that Ineos is kind of, that's their dude, maybe.
Did you see why he lost his third place overall? Did you see the crash?
Crash
with Sepp?
No, with Rodriguez. It was Rodriguez
who
went
down. Oh, when he just washed out,
No, his rear wheel, like, folded. Like a spoke broke. Something happened with his wheel, and his bike broke. And he went down immediately, and Sepp just went right over the top.
Okay, that was the Sepp crash, There was another time, though, that he washed out going through, like, a switchback. Did you see that?
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, he just lost his wheel and just went right down.
That was before. So this crash was on stage 20. The one where he washed out was, maybe that was before that?
It was pretty close,
Were they?
Okay. It was, like, 17 or 18 or 19, something like that. So he had a couple crashes, but, you know, some bad luck. Otherwise, he probably would have been standing on the podium.
Which is crazy. Yes. Well, I mean, Adam was...
A lot of minutes back, but I think at one point in time he was ahead of Adam Yates.
Yes.
So
he was only 2 minutes back. Right. And
Felix Gall looked good.
Yes.
He did look good.
I mean, Jai Hindley looked good for the first 8 or 10 days, and then he kind of faded, but he's gonna probably get a little bit stronger.
Yep.
So that was interesting to watch. There was who else looked good? Anybody else that kind of caught your guys' attention?
Godu was decent. He made the top 10, but he kind of cracked on a couple days.
Pretty Frenchy.
Yeah.
But he's still young and he's got some hope. I mean, we'll just say he's the next French hope to
We should give a nod to Evan for the Yates brothers doing so well in this tour.
I kind of expected Simon. I mean, that's their GC guy and he's strong. And
he's strong, but he ended up fourth or fifth.
Simon was fourth.
Fourth. I mean, that's... Not just strong, that's
12:23 back, and Adam was third at 10:56 back.
That's not bad.
Did you see the clip of them on the second to last day?
Where they look like they were mirror images.
They were just mirroring each other while they were both out of the saddle climbing up a hill. They looked like twins. It was like fantastic.
Yes. And they are. Yeah.
They are twins. That's so, pretty cool.
Yep. And We've talked about this a few times. How about some disappointments? I mean, I know that I've talked about Ineos, but aside from
Pidcock.
Pidcock was...
Did you see what he said?
Yeah, he felt like an impersonator or imposter.
Imposter. Yes, I felt like a GC imposter, like, wow, I can't do this.
This is my hot take. It's early. Come another hot take that's too early. The cyclocross trio that we have come to love had a blunder of a tour. Hot take.
That's a good hot take.
That is a hot take. Okay, Wout, Bridesmaid, how many times? He was second like four times, so he never pulled one off.
Went home devastated with a new baby.
Dude, did he not time that perfectly too?
Yeah.
He went home and like 6 hours later, baby.
Bam.
Now, I'm going to disagree on one bit of that.
Okay.
Matthew Vanderpool did not go there with any aspirations other than to be the lead out guy for Jasper Philipsen, and mission accomplished with the exception of the Champs where he lost by an inch or two. I think that he did a fantastic job. I don't know if they had it in their back pocket on their agenda of things they could accomplish that he's going to try and win a stage, but I never saw him attempt to try and go win a stage. I saw him go there and strictly support Jasper Philipsen.
So do you think, okay, so today's Monday. It's the day after the tour. Do you think he's sitting wherever he's sitting and he's like, that was a great tour for me?
I think that it was mission accomplished. I don't.
Maybe.
That was all that team was there for was to win stages.
He never went for a stage himself, did he?
He was in some breakaways.
He was in a couple breakaways.
But I just thought that he would snag a couple stages. I feel like him and Wout were probably like, I'll pick up a couple of stages.
I'll get a stage or two.
Yep.
Mr. Evan Price is trying to call in.
I think that he may have went up the road for a couple reasons. One was maybe to take away points from other people, maybe getting some green intermediate points just to make sure that Bennett didn't get, to lose stuff.
No, not but, Bennett. He wasn't even,
or not Ben, I'm
he
sorry,
wasn't
not
even
Ben.
At the tour this year.
Yeah, he was subpar. I'm sorry, for Jasper. And the other thing was just to be a satellite rider up the road in case, I don't know, for whatever reason, they were going to break away their sprinter and get him up the road. So I don't know. That's just my two cents, but I don't think that he ever truly was trying to win a stage. I don't. Yeah. So... What you got going on there, Matt? Is Evan coming by? Is he?
Oh. He's going to roll on in. He just wants to gloat.
I don't know. Can you gloat when you, you got one of your picks, right?
Okay. Let's go to our picks. Well, we can wait till Evan gets here.
We'll wait till Evan gets here so we can bash him for it.
But I think my picks were pretty okay. I mean, they're not like unbelievable or anything, but I think I nailed it.
A few moments later.
Evan Price. That was like a SpongeBob thing, isn't it? That's very much SpongeBob.
Yeah. Years of later.
Later. I was here the whole time. Oh. I was just sitting very quietly.
So Price is here. So now should we talk about our picks that we talked about, our podcast picks?
We
can ignore the fantasy stuff.
Oh, we are not going to ignore the fantasy stuff.
We will ignore the fantasy stuff. I didn't adjust the team enough.
You never adjusted the team.
Was I last?
I think so.
Let me make that very clear. Evan, you were dead last.
This is what happened to me. This is why I don't do fantasy football anymore, as I'm all amped in the beginning. I have a good draft, 2-3 weeks in, doing solid. Forget to change a team. Team tanks.
Oops. Yeah. Yeah.
I think we even had the likes of Alan Plank who joined.
Yeah,
he's
always
three stages
days
in.
He still beat you. Yeah,
you know the Fabio Jakobsen pickup was a bad pickup early on, and then he just didn't even finish the tour. So. All right, so let's go back and review our picks.
Okay, podcast picks.
Lance and I, we picked the same because Lance cheated and he looked at my notes, and that didn't work out so hot for him.
You guys,
Jai looked great, guys.
Well, he did for the first eight or 10 days.
He was seventh.
Seventh overall. So
it's better than my third pick.
Yeah. Lance and I both picked Toddy to win, Jonas in second, and we both picked Jai Hindley to finish in third.
And so Vingegaard won, Pogacar was second. So
we just got that backward.
We got that backward. And
I think
Hindley
it's a big one
seventh.
To get backwards.
It's the kind of the thing, right? Like those were the two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I nailed that, right? I mean,
Matt picked the first two dead on. He picked Jonas and he picked
Toddy. Matt luckily listened to me a little bit more.
I did. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to copy someone.
How did Ben O'Connor finish up in respect to Jai
third?
Hindley?
Did he
get
third?
You should get docked points on how bad Ben O'Connor ended up doing at the end of the day. Granted, the guy was chasing stages very well, but he was not on the team.
Don't you guys remember when he came into Felix Gall's interview and congratulated him? So he's kind of on the podium.
His team did very well.
Felix
had a wonderful race.
Ben O'Connor was 17th. He was an hour and 4 minutes back.
That's 17th? The last time Ben O'Connor gets to lead AG2R at the tour. And Felix Gall is their guy now.
His contract is, they're going to be second.
Felix Gall, his teammate, was 8th, 16 minutes back.
Felix had a great tour.
Yep. And I believe was second in
I assume O'Connor was their lead guy. And then they're I guess not, but... I don't know. I don't regret that pick at all. I also nailed the first two. I pick Vingegaard over Pogacar, and I think there should be huge points for that. How many points do I get for that? What's our point system?
That's the most important pick.
You get really bubbly water. You get nothing.
I get a free bubbly water.
Free bubbly water.
All right, that's pretty big.
And rounding out the picks, Evan had Jonas winning. He took Simon Yates in second and close. David Gaudu in third.
Not as close on David.
Let's see. Simon Yates ended up fourth. His brother beat him.
But his brother and him, it's basically Evan. The same guy. So that's on the podium.
And David Gaudu was ninth, 23 minutes back.
Not bad.
David.
Yeah.
So I think I won that, guys.
Actually, there's no winner.
Matt would be the winner because he got first and second.
Yeah, so right.
But there's no point system. Yeah. We didn't come up with a point system. What do I win?
I like you
bubbly
best,
water?
Matt. Okay. So you're the winner.
Thank you.
But I also think that I deserve some credit for calling the stage that Pogacar completely fell apart on.
Was it after
called the stage?
You didn't call the time trial. Called that the time trial. That was. I don't know.
He did call the Yates brothers, and I called and Yates, I said, no freaking way. One of them's not going to end up in the top 10. I was wrong.
Both of them almost made the podium.
So. Both of them almost made the podium.
They did well. It was a good tour for the Yates. It was
outside of Vingegaard and Pogacar, they were the story of the tour. Is that they're good. They're the next tier down.
Story of the tour.
Or maybe, oh yeah, they're
I
the
don't
next
know about that.
Down.
Maybe Phillipson.
The twins in third and fourth. That's never. Can you name a sport that's ever happened that twins?
Maybe Phillipson. Maybe Phillipson is the next biggest story of the tour.
There's always a sprinter that wins stages. It's a cooler story that wins.
He won four out of five sprint stages. That's pretty stinking good.
Yeah, but he lost the most important one.
Yeah,
he did. By a guy that I'd forgotten about.
If he had won in Paris, that'd be huge.
Yeah.
He missed it by a tire width.
We'll forget that Jasper won four in like 2-3 years. We'll forget that. You know, if it was five, I would remember it.
Just saying that, like, sprinters are kind of like, with the exception of Cavendish, sprinters are a lot like NFL running backs. They're fantastic for like 2-3, maybe 4 years.
Yeah. Shelf life.
And then,
over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then you forget about them.
Yep.
True.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because go back, I mean, Kittle, you know, did Kittle win four in a tour?
Yeah.
He was close. I think
with
he won
AG2R
four in a
back
tour.
In, what was that, like 2013
or
something?
So it's like every 5 or 6 years, you got that sprinter that's going to go into a tour, win four stages.
Okay,
so
what's your take on Cav then? What does he do? Does he stay retired or does he come back to get that number 35?
He will come back.
Didn't we have this? We had this conversation on this podcast.
We're gonna have
I know,
conversation
but it keeps
week,
changing.
You can tell.
Oh, has he said something? Has it been like an interview where he's like, I'm coming back?
He did go on. He came on Geraint Thomas's podcast. He was a special
guest. That's actually pretty cool.
40 minutes he came on for the whole show, and they asked him, and he didn't respond to it. He just didn't respond that he is going to come back or not come back.
I would love to know what a personal conversation between him and G was, though, because I bet if he was going to tell anybody what he's going to do, it's going to be G.
Yeah.
I mean, G would be the guy he's going to tell.
Well, I think he's being cautious. Obviously, he's cautious.
Yeah, and on his podcast, everybody
He probably doesn't know yet. He probably doesn't know yet. Still under shock of all this stuff. And what did I think last podcast I was like he's gonna go for it.
So yeah,
his collarbone surgery was a little more involved than they thought. They actually had to bone graft it. Mm-hmm. They had to take a chunk out of his hip to bone graft in up there. So it changed. Yeah. It was a little harder than they anticipated. Hmm. It was also his first broken collarbone, which also blows me away.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, because he also raced like track. And that's, I mean, like, that happens all the time.
He separated his shoulder a few times, but he has never broken a collarbone.
Huh. That's because of track, you crash so fast, you can't get your arm maybe out in time. You just nail your shoulder. It's like dislocated shoulder.
Maybe he has good bone density. Most cyclists don't, but he could be one of those. Yeah.
That's a good point. He's not Vincenzo Nibali fracturing his thoracic spine. So,
I think he's going to jump back on the bike in, like, October, November and say, you know what?
I don't know.
I think he's going to be part of a team's either coaching or he's going to be a director sportif, I think, in 2 years, but he's not going to come back and race next year.
He could be commentary, too. He could do commentary.
Yeah, I could see him doing commentary for a year, and then I think he'll get into a car.
He could just be done, too. He's made enough money. He's one of those cyclists that don't have to do a job.
Now, if you're going to come back and be a commentator over, like, trying to race one more time, you're still away from your family. You're still working quite a bit. Yeah. And yeah, granted, it's not as big of an ask because you're not going to be doing all the training, but you're still working quite a bit that's and you're like, away from the family. And that's the reason why he says he's retiring, hanging it up.
Well, everybody thought that Wigo was going to be completely out of the public eye when he was done. And Wiggins has been on GCN. He's been commentating randomly.
Yeah, but that stuff's not that well.
But not this year. Did nothing this year.
You're right. That was more last year. Wigo. He did a bunch of stuff.
And if you go do a couple things, I think it's easier like to be on a podcast or do some things like that versus like, oh, if you're a commentator for, you know, a full 3 weeks, you're gone. You are gone for that
the whole time.
Yeah. So
with no downtime at all.
It's those are long days too. Yeah. So
did you see Thomas Vogler? You remember Thomas Vogler?
Yes.
The French guy. He was the person on the motorcycle that stalled out.
I can't believe that they fined him because it wasn't his fault, apparently.
It wasn't, but
like
he got fined. But how do you collect a fine from Thomas Vogler? He's not even in the UCI anymore, but they fined him. I thought that was hilarious.
Also, they just know how much money Thomas Vogler, because they probably looked at everybody else like, who can we find here that we know is not going to like make a stink about this? Thomas Vogler.
Okay. Well, was it his media company that he was on the motorcycle filming? So if it's his media company and it was his pilot, his motorcycle, then he's going to get fined for that.
Yeah.
So
makes sense.
Idiot.
At the end of the day, when
crashes on a crazy corner, they should fine Thomas Vogler for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's also that was like 12
Cavendish seconds. Gets knocked out of the tour. They should fine Thomas Vogler for that. Yeah.
Yeah. A bee stings your hand.
Bee stings your
fine
hand.
Vogler.
The entire Covetous team got sick. Fine Thomas Vogler.
Covetous had a good start to the tour.
And a terrible end. I mean, that whole team got sick.
They end up with only like four
people
finishing.
But yeah, they won two stages, which was awesome. I mean, Covetous, that's huge for them. What was the last year they won?
2008.
Yeah, forever ago. I mean, that's,
Going back to Vogler real quick, remember when he used to race? He was like, so hard to watch. Like the way that his breathing habits, his facial expressions, is like, get him off the TV. This is making me like sick.
He's the most French cyclist in the history of France.
Like, over animated and over. Yes.
Okay, I'm glad that you guys are on the same page with me on that. I did not like watching him race.
No.
He's also kind of yoked now. He's not.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What?
No, he did not. He didn't go the usual path of the former pro cyclist who sits in cars where they just get really large. He got muscular. Like he
stayed
on
the sauce, but just used it a little bit differently.
Yes. He like hit the gym.
Good for him, man. Yeah. That's what I mean, honestly, for your health, that's what every pro cyclist should do when they're done with their careers.
Well, probably on what drugs he's taking.
That's true. I mean, he was like right in the heart of that.
Yeah.
Very advanced.
About like a case of testosterone. Yeah. Still had a whole bunch left over. He's like, might as well go get beefed up, man.
Right.
Beefcake.
He's like, oh, these steroids used to be for saddle sores.
Have you seen Ryan Hall?
Yeah, Ryan Hall's a great example.
So Ryan Hall was a great runner. He's like my age or whatever.
Fantastic marathoner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent runner. Yeah. And he basically, it's interesting because he really had to retire because he couldn't keep his testosterone levels high.
Yeah, he was having a lot of
having a lot of problems with that. And I think, and part of me is like, good on you, buddy. Like, he's not going to cheat. He's just like, I'm just going to retire and be done. He had the American record in the half marathon.
He was the only American to go under an hour at that time.
He may still have it, I don't know. But then
pre-carbon chew era too. That's a sub-hour half marathon pre-carbon chew.
And he just got thick. Just like hits the weights all the time. He's huge.
He doubled in size. Like his upper torso is
he's massive.
He looks and is a bodybuilder now. Yes. He looks like a bodybuilder.
And good for him. I think he has a podcast as well.
He does.
His wife still races.
Yes.
Sarah
Hall.
He still coaches.
And she's a superstar.
They have some like African foster children that they also coach.
Four women.
And they live in Flagstaff. I follow him on Instagram too. I'm a fan of Brian Hall.
He's a fun Instagram follow. I like him a lot. Yeah.
He's a great guy for the running. He seems solid, but I'm sure that his testosterone levels are quite fine now.
Yeah.
I would say. Sure.
Probably.
I'm sure he's doing okay in that department. Because
I actually think knowing him too, I bet he did it all clean.
I bet he did.
I bet he
did. Seems like he would probably, I don't know, who knows? It's hard to say, but then like when he retired, he's like, I got to take some testosterone because this is not like normal. I mean, you're running that much and you're that skinny and you're tiny. I mean, he's just next to nothing. I'm sure testosterone is hard.
He was a huge volume trainer too.
So
he was a big time volume trainer.
His testosterone levels were too low.
Right. They're very low.
And he couldn't get them up naturally, which is why he finally said, I can't do this anymore.
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not sure that that's the official reason that he retired, but he was making it clear that he was having a hard time with his testosterone levels. And that was like public knowledge. And then he retired shortly thereafter.
And started pumping weight.
And then, And I also think
he was like
put that much muscle.
Wasn't
on.
He trying to do like a like a 500-pound deadlift.
In a sub-5-minute mile.
In a sub-5-minute mile.
He failed miserably at that, actually. I saw that.
Yeah.
That's I'm not sure if he's tried it again, though, since that video I saw a while ago.
He's like one of the few people that can make that actually happen.
Yeah.
That would be so... the amount... Obviously, the amount of effort a 500-pound deadlift takes is serious. I could not imagine then with how your hamstrings feel after that moment being like, all right, let's break into my mile stride right after that. I mean, if you wanted to cook up a perfect like recipe to injure your hamstring, it would be let's do a max deadlift and then sprint mile. But
now a sub-5 for him is probably difficult. At the time, back in the day, that was just such a walk in the park. Because he was also
marathon pace.
when he was in college, he's one of the few people that like he was like a miler. He had a lot of speed in high school and then in college. And then as he got out of college, he was like, and marathon. So it's very, pretty very well. Big range. So he had some foot speed.
Yeah.
All right, Jake, get us back on track here.
He says, this is supposed to be cycling.
To tour.
Yeah. We're talking Ryan Hall.
Lance, do you want to talk about the fantasy standings?
Yes, I do.
Let's bust that out.
I think I did pretty well this year. Let's check. Wait.
We should just talk about the Yates. We should just talk about how both of them did so good and how Evan called it. And how next year there's no more making fun of him because he was right on everything.
You have this allotted amount of budget that you're supposed to trade out your team.
Yeah.
And it's like if someone like crashes or whatever, you can trade off that person.
Well, I was hoping they'd come back, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Possible. So
don't let him come back, right? He's missed the last three stages. He'll be back.
So I was on vacation the first week and I just got destroyed in the fantasy thing.
I didn't do too bad in the first couple days. I was still respectable the first couple days.
I really messed
up. It went downhill really quickly.
Yeah.
Evan, you're dead last.
Bob Youngles was getting bottles most of the tour. Don't know why I picked. Yeah, I'm not even sure if he got in a breakaway. Bob Youngles was not even... No, I always try to pick a guy that I think is going to be frequented in the breakaways.
That would be someone that I would think too.
I should have picked Mohorovic. That would have been a great pick.
Yep.
Should have picked up Mate.
But you could trade off these people when you realize that.
Yeah, I should have dropped Bob as soon as I knew that he was just grabbing bottles.
I had MVP for like so long, and then I was like,
he's not even
he's not even here to try. Like he's just like
he's a lead out.
I finally dropped him. But
yeah,
I think I was in first place for like the first four or five stages, and then Gary Cornelius came in and pipped me, and we might have gone back and forth one other time, but then I was chasing him for the rest of the tour, and it was funny because we were able to make some roster moves, we'll say, and you had a certain budget of like how many times you could do that. So basically every time you drop somebody, they charged you 50 points.
You
that's
could
not like that's
eight.
Not that's
you
not
could make eight roster moves
exactly. Yeah, and that wasn't 50 points from your points that you have for your
that's
overall total.
I thought it was
they just give you this an allotment of 50 points or 400 points that you could use, so you can make all those drops. You could drop eight people, but they didn't charge you to put somebody back on the team. So
okay,
I'm watching Gary and I'm seeing what he's got going on. I'm like, all right, in order to try and catch up to him or effectively beat him, I need to pick up a person that he doesn't have that's going to work well based on the couple stages coming up, and got to use these points wisely. Mm-hmm. And I would make the moves, and then the next morning, because you can't see what other people are doing until they start the stage. Then they'll open up everybody's rosters. I would go and look. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like so many times he would go and pick up the exact same person. I'm like, he doesn't know that I'm picking him up. We're just thinking the same way. And I just couldn't ever get the points necessary. And so like the last like three or four stages, I kind of rolled the dice and did a few things differently. It worked out for me all right. But I would pick a stage winner because you get bonus points for each one of that. And I would just miss. There was like three of the last four stages. I just missed having the right stage points. Yeah. And if just two of those had happened, I would have beat him. Yeah. But it just never happened. It was one of those things where I put the stage winner and that person would come in like second or third. And I,
this is 2 years in a row because last year I led for, I think, 20 stages.
Yeah.
And then he beat me on the last stage or something like that.
Yeah.
And he ended up winning. So this is two years in a row that he's won, won
he's
the fantasy thing.
So he was first. Second place was...
I wonder if it's 3 years.
Mr. Jake Von During. So he was roughly 400 points back.
And you were
Gary.
Third?
I was third. I was a full 1,000 points behind Gary.
I think I was 15th or something.
This very much reflected the tour. This was 1 and 2 were the only two that mattered.
So I finished with 15,220 points. Gary had 15,616 points. And Lance was in third place with 14,503 points. So it was moderately close between the three of us up there.
Not bad.
Mike Redig, fourth. Nathan Skanky, fifth.
Yep.
Who's Droff Dar? I don't know who that is.
I don't know who it is either.
I don't know who number six is.
Is that Carlos? Is
Carlos,
Carlos
was seventh.
Yeah, is Carlos.
Nate Scott was eighth. Oski Woski was ninth. Don't know who that
is.
That's
Oscar. It's one of our juniors.
Oscar. Okay. Alan Plank came up to 10th.
Yep.
Nice job, Plank.
Tim Niles, 11th. Chris Reel, 12th. Matt LeGrand, number 13.
Lucky number 13.
Oh, you beat me, Matt. Dang it.
Scooter was number 14th, who is Scott Trautman.
I had to change some people to actually beat you. I just
and then in dead last, a full 7,000 points behind the winner, Mr. Evan Price.
Oh, boy. Well... You know, I
8,000 points.
I really am more of a stage hunter in our Tour de France now, where I like predicting things that are going to happen, and I'm just so happy I predicted those things. But really, the whole grand picture, I just kind of soft pedal a lot of the round. I'm like Lefay on Kofidis when he won the stage, and they're like, "Is he going to go for the GC?" And they're like, "Oh God, no, he's just a day to day guy." Like this. He'll probably soft pedal the rest of the tour.
That was a lot of fun. And I know that Evan disconnected from it a little bit, but it was fun to watch Matt.
I'm going to fully commit next year, but I've done this with fantasy football for years, so I don't like my odds.
Matt did a great job of making the right moves just so he could say that he beat you, and, yes. and Lance was into it every day, and everybody had a fun time, and it was a blast. And I really think that next year we should really do a good job of pushing this out there to even more people. And
I know more juniors that'll want to do it. I know Oscar just did it this year, but I know Natalie and Julia, and they all watched the tour too this year, and we're really talking about it. It was awesome to see kids talking about it.
A few people who told me they're like, I thought about doing it, but then I was nervous because I didn't really know what I was doing. I'm like, it's so easy and it's just
like
fun.
Evan's in dead last place. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah, this so
Evan thinks he knows what he's talking about. He's still dead last. So anybody can play. Anybody can play.
This was always our joke with fantasy football. We're like, the guy who thinks he knows the most will guarantee be dead last.
So see how many people we can get to join us next year. That'd be a lot of fun. Let's go back to the tour real quick. We kind of gave our you know, 2 cents, our wrap, our summary, and all that other fun stuff. Evan, did you have any like big takeaways on this? Any hot takes from the tour?
Actually, I mean, really, this was the most fun I've had overanalyzing and watching a tour. Me and Cassie had so much fun just watching this tour.
Sure.
This was the best tour I can remember enjoyment-wise since honestly the year Vincenzo Nibali won, only because that was a very exciting GC.
Is that like 2014?
Tour. Yeah, but 2013 or 14. Yeah, somewhere right around there. So this to me was a awesome tour where down the line you just got, I mean, you had the Pogacar and Vinga go back and forth. But the battle for third was wildly fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Just the battle for the top 10 was fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I mean, just there were stages that like a moving day stage where the breakaway is only given, what, a minute half, and they stay, you know, there's Victor Campagne. We found that
it was
Casper,
basically like mistakes by the sprint teams.
Exactly.
There were two of them.
That was awesome.
In their defense, Casper Asgreen and Victor Campagnards are absolute machines.
Yeah.
Like though, I would love to see the power profile of Victor Campagnards on that stage, because that man, I mean, there might not be anybody stronger in a breakaway in the tour in recent memory than that guy.
He completely sacrificed himself for his teammate
to get second.
And it didn't work.
But looking back, do you think Victor in his head's like, screw this guy, kid, I should have done it myself.
It was so beautiful.
He drops back to the peloton to grab a teammate to bring him up to the breakaway then sits on the front of the breakaway and stays away.
It was amazing.
There were stages that normally we'd be like, all right, here we go. Here's Jasper's stage. Everybody fall asleep for a while. And there's so many strong riders now that just they make the tour wildly exciting, and it was awesome. My biggest takeaway is that I'm going back to my childhood enjoyment of cycling right now, and that means I am blocking out and completely ignoring and hate the talk of as soon as Vingegaard goes out there, and in my opinion, a story that should be celebrated, a guy that came from lower middle class means, worked manual labor jobs, somebody that is a old school tour winner in that sense. I mean, I know I talk about how I read a lot of historical books on this, but really he is from that era. I mean, he is quiet, very humble, not going to make a show of anything. And he wins the tour. He's that lower middle class guy. That's the guy that should be celebrated. And what are we all talking about again? On Phil Guymon's YouTube, on comments throughout everything is, what juice are they on? And I'm going back to my childhood enjoying of this.
They take drugs. That's what people want to hear and talk
about. Yeah. Also, who can just enjoy the tour, for God's sake? It's like, are we going to do this? Like, really, the question comes down to, are we going to do this every single tour?
Yeah, every time there is a superhuman effort, we will do it.
So
and we have been trained it's by all the drug cheats.
Correct. But there is definitely needs to be an argument for listening to the guys who came from the cheating, the really high density cheating area, where EPO just wild, wild west, saying they believe that the Peloton is
clean. I agree with that.
Now.
They know better
than
us.
We don't listen to those guys. We love to listen to that. And this is not me talking trash about Phil Guymon, but I'm going to talk trash about Phil Guymon because he doesn't know me and I don't care. not the guys that really have disconnected themselves from that world and just want to toss a bunch of dirt at it. Mm-hmm. But he has not, he says he's not even, doesn't even know or keep in contact with people in the Peloton anymore.
Yeah.
Guys who have just been through this era. Not that anybody should always blame, but I mean, Thomas Dekker, for instance, wildly dirty guy, wrote a great selling book though. And has said, he said, this new generation is not my generation. The difference is you can't just compare raw performances. One of my best examples me and Cassie were talking about is watch what Vingegaard did with his champagne on Champs-Élysées stage. Did you guys see that?
He mm-hmm. took a sip and then tosses he dumped it out.
Yep.
Do you know what Lance Armstrong did with his champagne?
Chugged it and asked for another one.
Three glasses. And then got hammered that night. So nobody wants to believe Lance, but Lance will talk about this. He actually believes they are just doing things differently than they did in the 90s. Does that not mean that they're walking gray lines?
It's so fun to believe that they might be
clean. I believe a good portion of this generation's clean. Is everybody clean? No, because that's completely ridiculous to think that in any sport everybody's clean.
I think that they might be clean in the ways that we're saying that they are not taking anything that is officially banned.
Yeah, I don't think they're doing like blood bags at night. I don't think that they're
doing.
They
might
be. I don't think they're openly taking EP.
I think it's possible that they're just taking your standard stuff that's not going to register on any drug tests.
I think what we're underestimating is the amount that they invest in research and physiology of how each individual responds to training. If you really read a lot of these old documentaries and everything, how they used to train and do nutrition for these guys, it was amazing they went as fast as they did. And the reason they went as fast as they did is because they were on stimulants and EPO.
Yeah.
So they could sleep 2-3 hours on crap beds.
Yeah.
Just hop into these hopped up on stimulants and everything like that and make it through in these human efforts.
But now the training is more scientific.
Yes. The recovery is the biggest change from
and
the 90s.
The amount of carbohydrates they take in during the race, that makes a difference as well. They didn't realize how much of a difference fueling properly during the stage
Lance was
would
telling
make.
A story about that where he was like, you want to know why Ulrich used to always die at these points, these really crucial parts? He's like, Ulrich would forget to eat. He's like, Ulrich will get to the end, and he's like, Lance is like, I've been riding next to him the whole time. He hasn't reached for a single gel or bottle this entire time. Now, if you told me go into a half Ironman and just don't eat, I'm going to perform wildly terrible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you then put somebody next to me who's fueling correctly, we could be the same exact talent level. He's going to perform to the point where people are like, oh, he's got to be doping because he's doing so much better than him. He slept better last night. He recovered all better all year.
And
his
it's that times 3 weeks.
Yeah,
so it's a lot more than
so
just that.
So it compounds over time. I think Vingegaard nails all those little 1%.
And you think Pogacar didn't?
Yeah, yeah. I think the biggest difference between Vingegaard and Pogacar is Pogacar is a more wildly naturally talented guy. Maybe he's a little bit more blasé with some of that, and Vingegaard is not. Vingegaard is dialed.
What about someone on Vingegaard's same team, like a guy like Wout Van Aert, who's also a time trialist? Mm-hmm. Who should have the same knowledge base that Vingegaard, and yet Vingegaard puts 3 minutes to him in the time trial.
So
suspicious.
No, Wout
is a cycling
god.
Here's Vingegaard crushed.
He put 3 minutes
into
him.
Here's the difference from this. Okay. This is fair. So I'm going off of there's. I watched a video where they really looked at the time trials. Okay.
Yep.
Especially the time differences between Pogacar and Vingegaard, because everybody just wants to look at it had to be Watts. Everybody's thinking it had to be watts. Like Vingegaard put out some alien watts.
We talked about this already. It was 7.5 watts per kilo for 14 minutes.
That was not his actual power data. That was a guesstimate. I was looking at that. It's a guesstimate.
All right.
So where he's making up time, when I've seen, there's a side-by-side video of these. One, he's taking the corners wildly better than Pogacar. Like he was getting a second to 2 second per corner. Okay. So there were 16 corners. So 32 seconds right there. He also, look at his position. Yes, they both work a lot on their position. Vingegaard literally looked invisible in the wind. And his warm-up, Pogacar also was like, got to the start line way early, apparently lost a lot of time in the first, 4K. It was already he was losing 4 seconds per K early on.
No, he was ahead of whoever, the rest of the entire field.
I'm just comparing Pogacar to Vingegaard
is the only two. Yes.
Vingegaard had apparently simulated this multiple times on what warm-up he responded best to.
Yeah.
So this dude was dialed going into this. And if you look at earlier in the tour, where did Vingegaard get his minute before? On a flat stretch.
Yeah.
So Vingegaard's putting out great power. And outside of just getting outbursted by Pogacar at the end of these stages, had already proven that over a time period where he was not getting pulls from anybody else, Vingegaard was on the front of that group, he put time into Pogacar there. So I don't think it was this weird blood bag, all of a sudden Vingegaard is fitter than Pogacar moment. It was Vingegaard knows Pogacar surges better than him. He's going to lose him at the end of stages every once in a while. When it came to those sustained efforts, Vingegaard was better this year, period. And I think Pogacar, if you really ask Pogacar, do you think Vingegaard's doping? I think he would say, no, this is what I'm more scared of, of him.
He also had the advantage of going behind Pogacar.
Yeah. Yep. And there and is sitting and responding.
And you've got somebody in your ear.
If he's telling him, you're getting 4 seconds on him each. I mean, think of how competitive these guys are. That's drugs right there. That is drugs.
A carrot to chase will make all of the difference in the world.
I would love to know if he had a radio in his head and didn't know. Yeah. I would have loved to know if he actually would have gotten that much time, but he would have gotten less time.
I would say it would be significant less. Yeah. So.
And then you start to see cars.
He was
come
descending
in,
like, wildly better.
You're like,
too.
Hey, this person's 2 minutes up, and I'm starting to see his cars come up. I mean, that's so like talk about
dig.
Drugs.
If you dig a little,
if you
bit
guys
more,
were
man.
Watching too, and I know that I know we all don't ride. I know that we got two actual cyclists here with mountain bikers. But Matt, were you watching how he was taking those corners in the bars?
Yeah.
That was Pogacar had to keep on coming on the drops on a couple of those. If you can nail a corner in the drops on a descent,
a
you gain time. Because, I mean, and not only was he nailing the corners, he was in his tuck going into those corners. Yeah. Like,
he stayed tucked a lot, significantly longer.
A ton of risk.
And
so
the,
I think
and then the
just,
bike change was...
Yep, no bike change. Yep.
And
no
bike that's change. Also momentum. So he carries a ton of momentum going into the start of that climb. Pogacar has to stop, get the momentum going. That's got to be like 15 seconds, right? I forget what the number in the video they were saying, but it was like ballpark 15 seconds.
Yeah.
So you got this situation where, he put over a minute, I think it was, for the time trial.
It's like a minute and a half.
And then the next day, it was a 6 minute.
5.5 minutes, almost 6 minutes the next day.
Of time. And that was clearly Pogacar just bust.
That was just Pogacar
cracking. I think
cracking.
That was, yes. Yes.
And that could be
this is where I'm saying it. I think it was all the little things that Vingegaard over three. If you put these two guys up next to each other in one day, Pogacar is the best one day cyclist in the world right now. We can make the argument with MVP and Wout, but I think on most courses and styles of riding, Pogacar is the best rider in the world.
Probably depends on the course.
Not over 3 weeks against Vingegaard. Well, Vingegaard is
do you
dialed.
Think that, do you think
this
that Pogacar
was
should
dialed.
Have? Do you think Pogacar should have sprinted at the end of each of those stages?
Nope. I think he's going to learn his lesson again and again. Is that he, if he wants to
keep
beat
learning
Vingegaard,
his lesson,
if he wants to beat Vingegaard, he cannot continue. I think Vingegaard is so. Looking back at this tour, you realize Vingegaard. Yes, he was scared of those attacks, but I bet in his head he's like, "There's another match.
Yeah.
There's another match.
He looked confident.
There's another match.
Like, he would get outkicked, and then he would still be smiling at the end of the stage. Which I was watching. I was watching to see if he starts mentally to crack, like that's the end of.
It's
all about that positive mental.
So Vingegaard knew when you looked at this tour, and that's why I looked at the map. And so Vingegaard also spent a lot more time at altitude than Pogacar did this last year. Vingegaard knew that this tour was going to be decided on that time trial and altitude stage. That was where the tour was going to be won this year. Now, all of his prep leading into this was geared towards being good in those two disciplines at altitude for sustained efforts and a time trial.
I actually thought that there would be more of a bloodbath in the first week or whatever, with people saying hey, here's Pogacar coming in a little out of control. Like, maybe he's not quite as sharp as he should be. And we have climbs in the first week. I thought there was going to be a lot more fireworks that first week. And there was.
They were
some,
pretty even for those.
Yeah. But not between those two. You're right. They were dead even until it got to those two.
And Pogacar looked really good for, coming off a wrist injury. So.
Yeah, he's amazing shape. I mean, Pogacar, quote unquote, in fitness is best in the world. Bar is I'm either the best in the world or I'm out of shape. So
the question then is, well, next year, and we're going to look at the tiebreaker. They're both 2-2. They've both been the two on the top of the podium for the last 4 years. And
three years.
Four. Yeah.
Was it four?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Roglic was out. Oh. When he won the first year. So
Pogacar won twice, and then Vingegaard won twice. So they've been the top for the last
years. My bad. So they've been 1-2 for three straight years, but they both have 2-2 when it comes to...
Yes. I think 4 years
Roglic
ago...
Roglic was second to him 4 years ago.
Was it second?
And Vingegaard wasn't there.
Yeah, he was.
4 years ago?
But he was not leading the team.
I'll pull it up in just a second.
Anyway. Okay, yeah.
Regardless, they've both been the
which is a record now.
Exactly.
That's a record for consecutive years.
Going into next year, I think... all of the pressure is going to be on UAE because they've lost the last 2 years now to Vingegaard, and they have to go back and they have to start breaking this apart, and they have to start listening to all the different pundits. They have to start looking at all the little factors and all of the things that came about that caused him to not win these last 2 years. I think what Matt has said, talking about the whole sprinting every single stage, That's going to be a big thing. And then how they're going to treat the spring classic leading up to that. Now, you made a comment like, well, maybe they want to win those, but
it's the tour.
It's the tour.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got like arguably.
Which is a shame because that's a loss for cycling fans if Pogacar doesn't get to focus on the spring classics. Because, well, man, not he to makes say it that
he can't do a couple of them, but yeah. Don't do everything.
Historically.
And if he doesn't break his wrist, it maybe looks different.
Yeah, I agree. Historically, I do think that you either pick the monuments or you pick the tour. Like if you look, yeah, like even Lance, oh, yeah.
In this era, like you kind of have to. I mean,
well, it's even years past.
Pogacar was, I mean, is the one guy of this era that's been able to not do it. But the problem is now he's living in the Vingegaard era all of a sudden. And if Vingegaard's goal is I'm going to win the Tour every year, Pogacar's not going to beat him if he's focusing on the sprint.
Not for nothing,
too.
Rimco, Evenepoel could be racing the Tour next year.
Man, I hope not. But God, that'd be great. You know,
it would be great for the sport.
Those three going at it. If Remco can get himself to that level over 3 weeks, is going to be so
neat.
Exciting.
It'll be great to watch. I do think that those two are
and don't sleep on Simon. Will be back next year. Simon Yates wants a podium.
You got to start penciling him in.
I am.
Put him at first.
Simon Yates will be on the podium. Sorry, David Gaudu. Why'd I bet on a French guy? I shouldn't have never been on a French guy. But
you always say that.
I know. And then I bet on a French guy. And then every
this
year
is
going
to be the year. And then at the end of it, it's like, why did I do that?
Never should have picked.
I feel like we should
guy.
Apologize to Simon Yates right now because he's just doomed.
I really should have gone back and just done Adam second, Simon third, and just been like, this is what's going to. The Yates brothers are both it this year.
Vingegaard did not do the tour in 2020. He did the Vuelta.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yes, yeah. That's
he did the Vuelta in 2020.
So they've been 1 and 2, 21, 22, 23.
Correct.
Gotcha. Yep. All right. Yep.
First time ever that's happened.
I stand corrected. So regardless, who are you going to call for 25 or 2024? 2024.
That's a great
early
question.
So early
question.
To know.
Now, this is better than Super Bowl picks. I like this. What's your podium for 2024?
I mean, seriously, I mean, you're going to call the Simon brothers or the Yates brothers to say that they're going to be up there trying
to
disrupt this.
Simon will be number three on the podium, but it's going to be Pogacar Vingegaard.
It's still fair to say that those two guys are going to be your top two dogs until proven otherwise.
That's a smart guess.
I mean, does Pogacar do the things that are necessary to unseat him? And what is UAE going to do different as a team to make that happen?
UAE's physiologist and their head coach is their physiologist, in my opinion, really. I think if you look at that relationship, he's going to try to change Pogacar's approach, I bet. He's very involved in how he trains leading into the tour. So I think Pogacar wins it next year.
Yeah.
I think he does. I think Vingegaard will be second, and it's going to be a wild battle. I think it'll be crazy.
And the crazy thing is Pogacar will be 25 at the tour next year.
Yep. Yeah, and what's Vingegaard, like 27?
I mean, he's been around.
This could be the next 10 years
of cycling. This his fifth year of doing this, and 26. He's just 25. So
he won't be in the white jersey contest anymore?
No, he set the record. It was 70, 70-something in a row?
Yeah, it's like 72 days. Yeah, 74 days total.
I was
going
to ask that. I was like, Merckx is the only other guy I could think was maybe close to that, but that'd be it, yeah.
That's an insane record that will probably never be broken again. But he turns 25, I think, in September, if I'm not mistaken, is what they said.
Unless, I mean, how old is Carlos Rodriguez? Not that I'm thinking that he's going to break into this, but he's.
Well, and you've got Remco. What's going to happen with him?
Can we go to another thing that I called? Was that Pidcock cracked towards the end there? Who didn't believe that he was going to crack? Was that everybody but me? In my head, it was.
I kind of thought. I kind of
think whatever you want, Evan. Yeah,
I think we need to go to the tape. I'm pretty sure Lance thought he was going to make it all the way.
No, that
like close. Was that Jake?
Jake picked him on his fantasy team for several of it, hoping that he would do well.
I thought he'd get some stage wins. I thought that was more of a stage win. Well, last year,
Carlos is the much better GC rider between those two,
bet
I think.
This year. He just didn't do anything.
Carlos can last over three weeks.
He coined himself as an imposter or something along those lines.
He called himself a GC imposter. He felt like a GC imposter.
That's too harsh on himself. But unfortunately, in this era, it's like, all right, you're either Pogacar or Vingegaard. Or really, really good. Gotcha. Like you need to be close to third.
All right. Well, we've beat this whole tour thing to death. Any other hot takes, Lance? Did you throw out your hot take?
No, I think we've talked about it enough.
All right. I do have one hot take, and my hot take is they need to get rid of this whole final stage 21 format, and they need to like open it up and sure do the whole lead out the whole procession thing, 5Ks, let everybody drink champagne if they want to, but. I wouldn't. And just say, go.
I think it's ending with a time trial.
Next year it is because of the
That's right. They won't be able to do it.
The Olympics are going to be in France.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Paris. The reason. I didn't know that was the reason. Okay,
yeah. So it'll finish with an uphill time trial on stage 21 or a time trial of some sorts. I'm guessing it'll be awesome. Uphill because that has been working out really well for them.
In Nice. Yeah. Okay. In Nice. Probably near where the world championship course is going to be for Ironman.
2025, yeah. It'll come back. They'll finish on the Champs again. I don't
care about the Champs-Élysées sprint either. It doesn't do it for me.
That's blasphemy for traditionalists.
It is. True. Yeah. Oh, I know that there's people like burning. Yeah.
That stage that. 21, half of it just completely sucks. And then half of it is kind of fun and exciting.
Do you think the riders like it though? Because we're all like, oh, we want more blood on the 21st stage. You're like, no, I want to drink champagne and chill.
Plus it was like a 500 kilometer transfer for them the night before.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, they probably don't like that.
That's hard on everybody to move everybody that far from stage 20 in to start 21.
It's a lot of logistics. What if they did, like, they go to the cobbles on the last, they like go to some just brute, like, they just do Paris-Roubaix on the last
we
day.
We didn't really have a big cobble stage this year.
No, we didn't.
No, they didn't.
Which was kind of boring, but
the first two stages were more different because it was more Basque climbing.
Is it truly a 3-week grand tour if you're cleaving off that last day and it's just more of like a formality for a sprinter to get some pomp and circumstance and glory to win a stage on the Champs? I mean, that's cool for a sprinter, but is it truly a grand tour, 3-week grand tour, if that last day isn't
whatever the Tour de France does? It is the standard. So
that's funny because even the Vuelta and the Giro kind of caught. You know, I mean, the Giro always ends in a sprint in Milan, right, or wherever they end up.
Sure,
I think is the last stage is a sprint. Rome. So it's the other Grand Tours try to copy that same idea. Rome, my bad. Yeah, Rome.
I just think that they need to say go.
make it
interesting. You know, so that you can actually go and race this thing. Let them drink champagne afterwards.
Yeah. But the TV coverage of the cyclists riding through the Louvre and going along the Champs and going past the Arc de Triomphe.
The sponsors like that.
Yes, this beautiful images. It's cool, like
photos.
It's like architecture, French architecture porn. Yeah. You know, for seeing all the beautiful things that are in France. That all happens on stage 21.
Let them go balls to the wall through there, and it's that much better.
The Louvre.
Yes. Someone just splattered against the
glass through it.
The glass on the Louvre.
Why not? Come on.
That would make for good TV.
The Arc de Triomphe.
Unchained would eat that up.
Okay. So I think that we're going to get the best of both worlds because, yes, we have the tradition or whatever it is, but next year we finish with the time trial. We finish with like a balls to the wall, like hard effort from anyone that wants to make an effort at it. And so we'll get that a bit of a race in the last race. And so we can see how that goes and we can compare it. And if like the sponsors are like, yep, it's not doing it for us, then that's your answer.
Well, I still think that everybody wants it to finish in Paris. I think that makes sense. I mean, that's the heartbeat of France and it's tradition, but just let them freaking race the whole thing. Like if you need to do the whole neutral rollout for the first few Ks to get your photo ops and then let them roll and let them like go after it.
But really
make the course interesting.
All the sponsor should care about right now is that if Unchained has season after season, that's all that should matter to the sponsors. Let's be honest, eyeballs are just on Netflix these days. So it's like, I mean, if that grows even bigger.
A
company, I really don't care that we're going through the Louvre. I care because it's awesome. Like that's cool. But like, I mean, for pomp and purpose, they're like, okay, we're a vacuum company. Yeah. Let's get on Netflix because we're just looking for people to order this online. I don't care if it's a picture in front of the Arc de Triomphe, as cool as it is.
I'd rather see them racing.
I would miss it at some point. I feel like I feel like the tour would lose a little bit of its history. And
if it wasn't finishing in...
I mean, the race has been going on since 1908, 1904, whatever the first year was.
Yeah.
That's a long time. I mean, it's just something that has so much history to it. I mean, it's literally gone through two world wars. Yeah. Just kind of crazy to think
about. Just imagine if you put like some stupid steep climb in there, but that's not like terribly long. Maybe it's like, I don't know, like a 3-minute climb or 2-minute climb, but it's like a 20% gradient or something like that.
Or the Giro went up a mountain bike course to finish.
Exactly. And then you got to go through the seats and streets and you make some sort of like, you know, like crit or something like that. It's not going to be a crit because you're not going to be going in circles, but you're doing some really tight stuff.
Throw some hay bales out there and make a cyclocross. Come on, guys.
Just do some stuff to make it interesting. Let some people try and establish a breakaway and get on the Champs and make it a true bona fide race where a guy could potentially put in some time and make up like a few minutes if they played their cards right.
I think they're going to keep it traditional. I think they're going to come back to the same format.
Oh, they're boring. Yeah. That's lame.
Yeah, it's UCI. So
that's just my take.
My last thought about this, if you haven't seen Matej Mohoric's post-race interview after he won stage 19, it is worth going back and seeing.
I haven't seen it.
He is on Bahrain's team, and so he won stage 19 in that
dramatic fashion.
Dramatic fashion where they couldn't tell who won. It was
because
the
camera
close.
Pulled away because they thought they were going to get caught, and they did not get caught. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But his post-race interview and the love that he shared for his team and his fallen teammate, Gino Mater, and just all all what has to happen for a writer to actually win a stage. He just said it eloquently and beautiful. It's a great interview. You should see
it. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it was cool to hear him talk about the insecurities too, because it was funny to hear one of the strongest cyclists in the world say he didn't think he belonged in the tour.
Yeah.
And
it's Mihoric.
Matej Mihoric is top 10 cyclists in the peloton right now, I'd say. Yeah. Like pick on any stage, any ground. Like, Mihoric should be there in the front. To hear how insecure he sounded, that is really speaks volumes, I think, to how much pressure it is to be a professional athlete like that.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right, one last thing. Matt LeGrand, you always start us off. Let's do it again.
I did post a video this past week about 10 cheap cycling accessories that you should consider picking up.
Triathlon accessories.
This is a triathlon podcast, isn't it?
Sure.
I get confused.
Pretty sure it is. It's a Ryan podcast.
A lot of things do crossover.
We talked about Ryan Hall.
There's a product announcement that's going to be on Thursday, and so be on the lookout for that. And then I think after that, I have like this ring. It's called the Ultra Human Ring. There's a video. I'll do a review of this ring soon. Human. Yeah, it's actually pretty cool. It'll track your sleep. It'll do all this stuff. It's like a whoop strap.
A whoop strap or an Aura ring.
Okay. What's cool is I took a nap at some point. Like, I don't remember which day it was. And it was like, we think you just took a nap. And I'm like, oh, that's nice. I wish Garmin did that or the Apple Watch. Whoop.
Whoop recognizes.
Shut up, Whoop.
Your naps.
Okay, here's the actual distinguishing factor. The Aura ring subscription. Whoop. Subscription. Yes. This, I think you have the choice of buying it outright, and it's $350, if I remember correctly. I'll get all this right in the video in 2 weeks when I post this. Or you can do, I think, get it for $200, and you can get a subscription to all of this stuff. So I think a lot of people are going to be subscription filled to the brim, and they don't want to deal with any of that anymore, and they're going to go for it that way. And that's really why I wanted to check out this.
Here's a question
product.
On that.
Yeah.
It has to have a battery in it, right?
It has a battery. It has a temperature. It'll tell you like what your skin temperature is and how that is affecting your sleep. Huh. It does a lot of like suggestions like, okay, try to avoid bright screens and lights at certain times. It gives you like this little window for sleeping things. And then morning time, it's talking about like, okay, try to get some exposure. Suggestions for like when to work out. It's actually pretty thick on stats.
Yeah. It's very similar to the wedding ring that I wear. It's one of these silicone ones in terms of size. It's maybe a touch bigger, but it's the fact that it's got like a full functioning battery in there and all the other
right?
Is it silicone?
Technology? No.
No.
It's not. So my thought is that it's not the most comfortable ring that I've... Because I tried the Aura ring. I reviewed it and I thought it was pretty comfortable, even though it's thick or whatever. But
It's light.
They're calling this really one light. The Ultra... So they've got two rings, this company, and this is called their Air Edition. So it is like thinner. And it's just not as comfortable as that's my negatives. Lots of positives about this product. My negatives will be in the video that it's not quite as comfortable. Like I find it like scratching things.
Anyway,
what is the battery life on that?
I need to double check my notes, but I think like 5 days.
That's not too bad considering it's in a ring. That's bonkers if you ask me.
Yeah.
It would last that long. That's pretty cool.
Maybe 4 days. I'd have to double check. It gives you a notification like right now I'm below 30% battery life. So when I get in front of the computer and I'm doing some work today, I'll slap it on this little ring charger thing and charge it up.
And again, is that something where you have to go into their proprietary app or can you connect it to other stuff?
They have a proprietary app where you're getting all these insights into like your sleep and all this other stuff. And then the notifications tell you like, it'll give you, if we look at my notifications, it'll say like, you should get off your fat ass and maybe like, oh yeah, there you go. 6 minutes ago. It's like time to move. You've been sitting around talking about cycling. You're not actually cycling. You're just talking about cycling.
What if you're sitting while you're cycling?
So it's good, but so you don't have to dive into the app to get the notifications, but it's not really connecting to Strava or anything like that because it doesn't really track workouts. They are having some software updates currently. It's in beta, but where they're saying like, yeah, we can track your heart rate for workouts and things like that. I wouldn't suggest using this for that as a tool because it's just like people say that the finger's a great accurate place to get heart rate data and they are lying to themselves because it's not. So
interesting.
Yep.
Cool.
Be on the lookout for these videos coming to a YouTube channel near you.
Matt LeGrand.
At a time in the future.
Pop star.
Someday.
Matt LeGrand.
Pop star. That's it.
Evan Price. One last thing.
Wait, can we hear about his race?
One last thing.
Oh, we can give a very one last thing recap.
One last thing. Back pedal.
Back pedal.
Yeah, I raced in Salem, Oregon this last weekend. Big pro field, downstream swim.
70.3. 70.3. Half Ironman.
So huge, yeah, huge pro field.
Very big pro field. So went into it feeling good and hoping I could do better than I did. I did okay on the swim. It was a violent swim. That is for sure. My God.
Did you throw some bows?
I got some bows thrown at me. I got hit in the head quite a few times.
Did Lionel throw a bow at you?
Folly and Lionel, me, him and Ari were all like kind of next to each other and tried to cooperate. And then it just ended up just Lionel just bodying all of us. And then bodying me. And then I was like, all right, time to try to catch feet. So still swam just fine. Like came out 33rd out of 45, which is just.
Where was Ari in relation to you on the swim?
15 seconds up. So it was, there was a group 15 seconds right ahead of me.
Okay. Yeah.
So biked super well. That's, you know, kind of been them. I'm now able to push. I can push 300 watts for a half bike, which is good.
Were you close to Ari in the bike?
Yeah, I was about 30 seconds off him on the bike. So but it's just if you're not in these groups, there was a 12-person group up the road, and they were moving fast at less watts. So it's just that's part of the game. And if you're not in that group, you better be able to push over 300 watts these days. So
you were on your own.
Yes. Moving through the field at that point. So came off the bike in 21st, ready to, I thought, you know, man, I'm going to have a top 20 day in this big field.
So did Ari sit in a group?
No. Me and Ari both kind of did the same thing where we were both just having to move from guy to guy. We were just moving through. We were just 30 seconds apart from each other.
I assume that Lionel was ahead of you guys in the swim.
Oh, yeah. Well, Lionel just tore through the field. He biked 159.
I would expect for him to move through the field.
Yeah, because I went like 210 almost on the dot, and going under 210 on that course solo is strong. You got to be like you got to be like a 4.5 watt per kilo guy to be able to do that for the half.
I just think like maybe if you're somehow figure out a way to make your bike more chill, because you could run 115.
I actually, my legs felt good though, so like there was no cramping. The problem was I did launch a bottle, so I lost half my nutrition, which sucks. But I've been just having trouble with my run lately. I think feel like my old self.
I think
on
you
run.
Need a reasonably chill bike to go 115 on the run. And that's, I feel like, very doable for you.
It does. It just means swimming.
Which is very fast.
It means swimming
field.
A little better and being with the guys I know are around that bike speed. Because
you need to sit in on the bike a bit.
Yeah, because you still got to, in a race like this with 45 guys, you still got to be able to bike like
mentally. I think that's going to be hard for you to be like, I'm going to sit in on the bike.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like going to the front on the bike. But I did not run super great. Ran 123 or something, which is just honestly, embarrassingly, and frustratingly terrible after so many years now of building up the run to where I know I need to be running 115, 116. Running a 123 is like the equivalent of studying for a test and then not filling in 50% of it and failing and dropping out of school was what that race felt like to me. So
so you think it's partially nutrition, partially due to cycling a bit on the hard side?
I don't think I'm the same runner that I was last year, so I'm making changes. So I'm making a lot of changes to how I'm approaching my run training, and I don't think I've been training hard enough this year, so I'm making shifts.
Okay, yeah. You're still working with the coach.
I'm going to make changes going into the rest of this year. So yeah, nothing to wrong with the coach. My coach is an absolutely wonderful person. He is seriously one of the best guys I've ever met in the sport. And I would, if anybody ever asked me, they're like, "Hey, I'm a budding pro and I'm looking for a coach," I would refer them to Elliot.
So would you
any
say
day,
that it'd be a happy medium that you're going towards, basically like what old Evan versus new Evan with the coach? You're going to try and find that like a happy medium ground in there. There's a
spot in the middle that I need to lie. And I'm going to find that spot, but it's in, I know that people watch like a Lionel Sanders channel. They roll their eyes all the time. Cause Lionel's going,
you and I always love to make fun of Lionel.
From coach to coach. And they're like, oh, he just needs to stick with stuff. But I want people to understand something, that when you're racing in the mid pack for a couple years, there are guys that I've beaten in the past and I know I should be at that are now getting top 10 results. And it's random and tough sometimes when you're in these 10 to 30 slots in these races. Little things matter. And I am going on 32 next weekend. So my window is shrinking time wise. Mm-hmm. I don't have all the time in the world to wait to see if a stimulus works. I'm old enough and coach myself long enough now after 14 years of, 13 years of coaching myself and now 14 years in triathlon. I have an idea of what was dumb in my past, what I respond well to and what I don't respond well to. So I'm going to trust the people I have people I've set up around me to make sure I'm not doing training myself completely stupid. I'm not training myself entirely.
Is Josh one of those people?
Yes. Josh and Artie are those two people. And it's
they're good people.
I have no problem sharing any of this stuff because I have nothing bad to say about
Josh. Going to stick with the same coaching situation?
Absolutely, and he should because he's been Josh. Yeah. Josh had it. That was going to be one of my lessons, which is going to be Josh Monda absolutely went out there and showed not only is he one of the best amateurs in North America, if not the top three amateur probably in North America right now, he is going to go in the pro field at the end of this year, next year, and be a very solid. I mean, like, I think.
How did he do? What was
he won the amateur race
by a landslide.
By like 8 minutes. Okay. He won the amateur race by like 8 or 9 minutes, but he's also like 43, right?
42.
And he won the freaking amateur race. Come on.
He's getting, and just the improvements from last year, Josh, to this year, Josh, show that he is not just going to be that amateur guy that comes in and disappears in the mid-pack. I actually think Josh, at his best, continuing at this rate with Elliot, our coach, has done an amazing job with Josh, and I think that he's ready to be that guy that can be in the conversation for top 10s, top 15s in these races. Hmm.
Wow.
And it's going to be fun to watch. I still think that his best race is probably going to be in the Ironman, which is tough because that's just freaking hard to
race. I agree with
Ironman's
that.
A lot in the pro field, but I think
he's got it, man. He knows how to race an Ironman.
He's dialed. Yeah, I mean, he's got his nutrition down. He's really got his effort dispersion. He's very smart with how he races. So it's gonna be fun to watch. But yeah, I am for my own self going to make changes and. You know, I would fully support Josh staying with his plan right now because he's dead on, like, nailing it. Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right on.
Yep.
Cool. Lance Hepler, one last thing.
I am also racing my bike this weekend.
Yes, you are.
Excuse me. So, the Obra Short Track Championships are on Saturday morning, short track mountain bike racing. And then the Obra Cross Country mountain bike racing are on Sunday. So
correct. Where is that at?
It's at the Washougal Motocross Park in Washougal, Washington.
And who's putting that on?
Zone 5 Promotions and our friend Scott Schultz.
Yep.
So we're putting that on. So.
And it's the state championship for?
State championship for the state of Oregon and state championship for the state of Washington.
Correct.
So
it's Obra and WSBA playing nice.
Yes. They're doing something together, which is fantastic.
Which is good. Very good.
So I'm going to show up and I'm going full Cobb, no jackass. I am just going to jump right in and see how fast I can go. I am not as fit or as fast as I was at the beginning of the season because I've taken this little mid-season break and I've been all wedding joy. So, but we'll just go show up and see how it goes.
Sweet. my one last thing is I will not be at that race racing my bike because I am still currently dealing with some issues, but I did want to go out there and at least cheer everybody on and take photos. I don't think I'm even going to be able to do that because I looked at the calendar and I kind of had my days off a little bit and I'm going to be out of town. I'm going to be going up to Seattle and then flying out to Colorado and looking at four different universities for my daughter.
Oh, cool. Oh. All right.
So yeah, there might be a chance that I can come out Saturday morning, but we're going to be driving up to Seattle to see some family real quick and then go catch a flight and yada, yada, yada. So
my race is early on Saturday.
Try and cheer you on a little bit. No, that's fine.
What colleges is she visiting up there?
We're going to look at UW, and then we're going to fly over to Colorado, and she's going to look at Colorado State, University of Colorado Boulder, and then University of Denver, is it? Is that the one Denver in Denver?
Yeah.
Whatever that is. So we're looking at those three. The one that she's most interested out there is University of Colorado, and Boulder, potentially UW. But I have a sneaking suspicion that she's going to stay quasi-local, and she might end up at the University of Oregon. So we'll see.
Yeah,
that should be fun. But my one last thing, since Lance already kind of squashed that because I had a sneaking suspicion he was going to say that, is there's also another gravel race this weekend that you should go check out. Our friend over at Mike Ripley over at Mudslinger, he's doing that. Was it the Sasquatch Duo?
Sasquatch Duro, or whatever it is.
It's like one of the last gravel races on the calendar for the year, right?
It's out of Oak Ridge, Oregon.
Yep.
So kind of down not far from Eugene.
Yep. Have you done that one before, Matt?
I have not.
Yeah.
I've ridden all around there, and I've ridden part of those roads were part of the Oregon Trail Gravel Grinder that we did.
Yep.
There's a lot of freaking climbing out there.
Lots of racing to be had this weekend. So if you want to go race your bike, you got options. Got options, my friend. All right, guys, anything else before we wrap this thing up?
That's it. Thanks for having us.
That's good.
Yeah, thanks for making your way over here, Evan. It was good to have you in studio for that. Lance, you got anything else?
Nope.
Oh, I guess one last time, congratulations to Darby and Julie.
Absolutely.
Big congratulations. That's awesome.
It looked like a blast.
It was a blast.
We were living vicariously through it on Instagram.
It was a good time. It was a good time. Thank you, guys.
Cool. All right. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week with another one of these. And until then, bye for now.